Hour number two on this Friday, Darren McFarland, that's me, here on the south side of town, down here in Rutherford County, holding down the fort in Smyrna. Willie Donick over in East Nashville, Chase McCabe on the west side of town in Bellevue. Marquise Munson back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. We have talked a lot about Dana White and the UFC this week and them attempting to hold UFC 249 next Saturday. I did say, by the way, tomorrow at the end of last hour. I meant next Saturday, April 18th, and it will not take place now. And the man who has been talking with Dana White and covering this story for ESPN is Brett Okamoto, and he is on the line with us. Brett, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man, and don't worry about getting the date wrong. I think it's real hard to keep dates correct these days. You know, I've done it a few times myself.
Well, I get excited just trying to announce something live was going to take place, right? We're just so desperate for something in sports to be live, and we thought maybe we were going to get that. But they have the decision has come down. Dana White talking to you. I know that you've been talking with Dana White and covering this story. So let's just start there, Brett. Why do you think that the decision, because this has been in the works. Dana's been saying this for weeks. Of course, the place was never disclosed, but why do you think this was shut down now?
Yeah, he eventually did disclose it yesterday.
Did he?
You know,
okay.
To me, that it was going to be Attache Palace, which is a little bit north of Fresno, California. It's tribal lands. It's an Indian reservation, and the reason that it didn't happen was because the decision was taken away from Dana White. You know, I've been covering Dana White a long time, and even you know people out there who haven't been as close to him as I have, just seeing him from afar, they know that this guy, he doesn't really care what other people think. He doesn't care what other people say. He runs his business as he sees fit, and he does what he thinks is right. And he felt like he could put everything in place to get the athletes there, to have them compete safely and get them back and get them paid, you know, and give people at home something to watch. He was really, really passionate about making it happen, and I could sense his disappointment when I spoke to him yesterday. But, you know, with the state of California, even though it was on a tribal land, with California, you know, saying, telling people to stay in their homes, you know, basically a statewide shutdown, you know, the impacts that has on, you know, not only just the UFC's perception, but also its broadcast partner, ESPN. I mean, he said, you know, point blank that you know, he got calls from ESPN and they asked him to, they said, hey, we appreciate your effort, but we no longer think that this is a good idea. And he said, well, what can I do? They're my partners. So I pulled the plug.
So you mentioned that he did disclose it. I know that was the rumor where you said it was. So I didn't see yesterday that it was actually, it finally came out there and that's exactly what it was. Why do you think he was so secretive about not disclosing the location?
Well, I think he didn't want a lot of people, you know, putting a lot of attention on where it was going to be. You know, what I mean by that is, you know, by trying to bombard, you know, Attache Palace, the venue that it was going to be at, with phone calls, and it just made things more difficult. I mean, I feel like I have a small understanding of what went into trying to put this together, and I still know, I'm not naive enough to think that I have no idea what it took to put this together. I mean, the amount of hours and the amount of planning and, you know, with everything just changing. I mean, the venue where this fight was going to take place changed multiple times. So I think Dana really got to a point where he was like, I'm not telling anybody anything, just because when people catch wind of something, you know, it puts everything under a microscope, and it's hard enough right now to just get the event and get everything in place. And so if we have, you know, a bunch of media descend upon this area where we're trying to hold a fight, then it actually makes our jobs harder.
Brett, when we've been talking about this story on the show, a little bit of background on me. I did an MMA show, an hour, on terrestrial radio for probably at least a decade in this market. And so I've dealt with Dana White for a long time, too. So I don't have probably the relationship that you do. And it's been a while since I've dealt with Dana. But, you know, when the events would come here, the fight nights would come here, I've dealt with Dana White really from early days when really nobody, hardly very, very few people were even talking to him. And I've painted the picture exactly what you laid out there. As you know, he's a guy that's done it his way, and it's worked. They bought it for $2 million, and, you know, it's worth billions. And so he's done it his way, and certainly, you know, abiding by the rules and doing things the way most people would do it is not the Dana White way. How difficult do you think it was? Because he doesn't like to back off. I mean, if he believes in something and he's passionate about something, he believes it should happen, then he's going to go to the end to make sure that it does until it just can't happen. How tough do you think it was for him to back down? Because he's fought networks, he's fought, you know, politicians and states, and as you know, how hard do you think it was for him to back down to your employer?
You know, I think everything that you said there is absolutely correct, and he does not take a loss well. So under normal circumstances and under the majority of circumstances, you don't see Dana White back down. Like it's almost like a trick question, because it's not hard for him to do it because he doesn't do it. I mean, he just puts his head down and fights through whatever anybody is telling him. But another thing that I will say about Dana is that he does have – when he does respect somebody and when he does – have a loyalty or a business arrangement with them. I mean, obviously, it's not a large group, but I think about, you know, obviously his friend Lorenzo Fertitta and Lorenzo's brother Frank that bought the UFC and put him as president. You know, I think about Ari Emanuel, who runs Endeavor and has represented Dana for a long time, and now I think about, you know, some of the executives at ESPN. I will say that, you know, when I have had conversations with Dana, and it's not like this is a topic that we talk about in depth that frequently, but he really does respect the decision makers and the executives at ESPN. He has a good relationship with them. He feels like they have helped his business, that they know what they're doing. Obviously, ESPN is a terrific brand, and they have a large reach, and the way that they cover sports and the discussions that they have and the topics that they cover, he believes it helps them. You know, he looks at them in that light. So that amount of respect that he has for them helped him, I think, accept that decision of like, hey, Dana, look, we get it. You know, you don't have to sit there and tell us why this fight should go on. We've been with you all the way up to this point, but we as a company just can't stand behind you anymore. And I think the respect that he has for the relationship with ESPN helped, you know, soften that blow a little bit.
Brett Okamoto on the line with us, covers the UFC and mixed martial arts for ESPN. And, Brett, we've seen all these models kind of get leaked and stuff being tossed around, whether how much there's truth to it, how much is really being discussed with all sports leagues, right? They're all trying to figure out whether it's the NBA in Las Vegas, you know, Major League Baseball in the Phoenix area. And we've seen what Vince McMahon and wrestling is doing and some of the things that have been tossed out on the UFC side. You mentioned where this location was going to be. There's this thing about the island. Dana is going to want to, he's not going to sit on his hands for the next 6 months and not have a product. How realistic is it to pull off what he was trying to pull off next Saturday and moving forward? I don't know how privied you are to some of the stuff behind the scenes or how much he's talked about what it takes to actually pull it off in the times that we're in.
Well, if you think about it, you know, what the two main locations that I think are end up going to come into play now over the next, you know, month and beyond, you think about what they are. One of them is this Fight Island that he's referring to, which we kind of laugh about and we make jokes about, that it sounds like something out of a movie, but he's saying that it's 100% legit, that they're actually building an infrastructure on it right now. And I don't disbelieve him. You know, I think that when he says that, I take it for face value. I look at that as a possibility. And the other one I look at is actually not in California. It's in Las Vegas, because the original plan when all of this started to happen was that the UFC has its headquarters in Vegas. They have a performance institute there that has, you know, a lot of medical necessities. It has, you know, the training facility. And then right across the street is their Apex Center, which is where they hold one of their shows, the Dana White Contender Series, which is actually live fights. It's a warehouse-looking area. The cage is in there. They have all the lighting in there. They have everything they need from, cameras and studios and everything. I mean, he built that building for the sole purpose of being able to hold live events there. And he did it before all of this stuff with the virus was even going on. So if you look at those two different locations, what do they have in common? He has control over them. He has control over his Apex facility in Vegas. He has control over some infrastructure that is being built on an island. And so I think that's what is going to be key in my mind, in a sport resuming is how much control can they have? You know, are these athletes going to be in one spot? Are they going to be quarantined? Are they going to be tested? Because if you start to lose control, then you open up to the virus, you know, becoming a factor. So I think the UFC is actually in a pretty good spot in terms of resuming operations before other sports because they have these scenarios where they will have control and they have kind of a half-crazy promoter at the top who really, really wants to do it. So when I was done interviewing Dana yesterday, he said, I'll see you in a month. I think that's probably an optimistic take, but I also think it's a realistic take because their next pay-per-view is May 9th, and my guess is that they are going to do everything they can to try and put that thing on somewhere.
Brett, with everything you just said about having the control over the facilities, do you think that he's had conversations with Vince McMahon or somebody from WWE of how they've pulled this off, pulled their biggest pay-per-view WrestleMania off, and ideas that he could get from them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he spoke a couple times about Vince. I don't know if it was during my interview or when we were just kind of chatting briefly off to the side, but, you know, when Donald Trump, the president, had a call with all of the commissioners from all the leagues, you know, it sounded like, you know, Vince was real bullish on, like, hey, let's keep things going, and we know how Dana feels about it, too. So I think that, you know, Vince and Dana sort of had a complicated relationship in the past, but they have worked together on some things, and I think both of them are similar and that they really, really, really want to keep operations going, and they're willing to get creative and explore every avenue. So, yeah, I do believe they've had some conversations.
What are the fighters' response to all of this and everything that's going on? Because, it you know, some were preparing to have a pay-per-view, to have an event, and some had backed out. What's the overall response that you're getting?
Yeah, in general, the majority, I would say kind of the overwhelming, quite frankly, response that I've gotten is that these guys want to fight. And there's a few factors that go into that. I mean, they don't get paid if they don't fight. So obviously they're thinking about from a financial standpoint, you know, we want to perform and we want to get paid. But there's also the competitive side. I mean, you ask any athlete out there, they all want to play. I mean, that's not just particular to this sport. That's with all of them. I mean, they're good at what they do because they're passionate about what they do. You know, they've made it this far to be a professional athlete because they love it and they're good at it. So, these fighters I've spoken to, you know, some of them have said, man, this is crazy. You know, we're getting on a plane during these times and I'm trying to cut weight and I'm trying to train for a fight, you know, with one or two people around me, and I'm running on a treadmill in my basement. This is not how I train for a fight. But overall, yeah, they wanted to keep doing it.
Do you think we eventually, when this is over, we get the Ferguson-Khabib fight?
Oh, man. I mean, that is the most cursed sporting event perhaps ever of all time, you know, let alone mixed martial arts. I mean, it's you don't want to laugh because it's very serious, but,
right.
I mean, Tony Ferguson tripping over a cord in a studio and now a global pandemic? I mean, it's just hard to believe, but you know what? I mean, me personally, I'm not real superstitious. I don't really, I guess, believe in curses. I think it's going to happen. I think we're going to see it this year. I'm optimistic. But, man, I mean, if anybody out there says this thing's never going to happen, I won't argue with you. It's been a crazy, crazy thing.
Brett, keep up the good work. We enjoy watching your work. And thanks for coming on and doing this. We really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you down the road.
Hey, thank you, guys. Be well.
All right, you too. Brett Okamoto covers the sport, UFC 4 ESPN, and we do appreciate him joining us. We will come back and discuss a little bit of what you just heard on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. But first, let me tell you about folks at USS. Yeah, I want to talk to you about United Structural Systems, a foundation repair and waterproofing company that has served our area here in Middle Tennessee since 1994. They've got a whole lot of satisfied homeowners, and I'm talking to a lot of homeowners right now that are hearing this. How about more than 18,000 satisfied residential customers? And we've had some rain. We're going to get some more rain this weekend. I think Sunday is 100% chance of rain. And maybe with the recent rain, you've noticed some standing water in a crawl space, or maybe some bowing basement walls, or maybe musty odors or rot in floor joists, or condensation on ductwork, or cracks in basement floors. Look, all these are signs that your house is telling you something, like, hey, something's wrong, need to be fixed. And more times than not, while we may mow the yard, or we may paint a room, or we can fix some things, these are probably house projects you don't want to tackle. You want to let the experts do that, and they are the experts. And if you need to get the experts out to your house, they're going to give you a free estimate. They're going to assess the situation, give you a free estimate. They're locally owned. They're licensed and insured. And as a homeowner, that should get your attention. 615-227-2275. That's 227-2275 to get the fine folks at USS out to your house to see what's going on. You can always check out and learn anything about them by going to their website, USSTN.com. That's USSTN.com. And as they say, we guarantee our best. Call USS. You just made the list coming up at high noon. We'll also talk to John Glennon in the third hour. We'll have to do a little trivia in the fourth and final hour and hear a little bit from Mookie Betts, who we had a great conversation with yesterday. So what did you guys make of Brett Okamoto and the news of UFC 249 next Saturday? ESPN has decided not to move forward with that event.
I don't think he had a choice. I mean, I think when the partner says, hey, we don't feel comfortable with this, this isn't a good idea, I don't think you can really push back on that because he has a pretty darn good relationship with ESPN. They've made each other a lot of money since that began, what, 2 years ago now? I think they switched over from Fox. So I think you kind of have to step back and you know, some of the fighters had pulled out. And so I don't think Dana White had a choice. Now, with all that said, he's going to get back to the drawing board and he's going to figure something out and he's going to present a plan to ESPN and to his other partners that I think will work, and because that's what he does. He's not just going to sit there until he's told, okay, you can come back. So that's my biggest takeaway.
Well, I mean, it goes without saying that he was shut down, and ESPN is the one who's going to be showing the fight. If you don't have your TV partner, then you have no fight, especially if you have no fans. So we understand that, but the question is why? I mean, he's been spouting this stuff off for weeks. Why did ESPN shut it down now? It's not a matter of how this happened.
Was it because of the interview?
Like that's why I'm asking the question. Like, why do you guys think today?
That was my thought.
What, yesterday, I guess, is when it got out. Why now? This has been going on for weeks. He's been doing interviews with Brett Okamoto and ESPN and all these shows, First Take and Get Up, and you know, he's been doing the shows and talking about this. So why now?
Yeah,
that's what I wanted.
I think the interview probably had something to do with it because he came off like Dana White, like that you and I know, Darren. I mean, from watching the sport, and you've obviously talked to him a lot. I've interviewed him once. I mean, he came off like Dana White, which is kind of an arrogant, you know what? So that's, you know, he wouldn't answer some of Greenberg's questions. You know, was very tight-lipped about where the fight was going to be. So there could be some ESPN executives that didn't like that. That they, you know, in a time of uncertainty, you need to be a little more transparent. That could be how they felt, and he wasn't that way. So I think that could have had something to do with it. I think it's a very good point because I'm not saying he looked bad in it. He looked himself. He looked kind of arrogant.
Well, if that's ESPN's decision, then they don't have a very good relationship because
True. If
you don't know that about him, then. You know, I don't know why you've gone into business with them. I mean, this is exactly who he is and who he's always been. So you can't, if you're ESPN, I can't imagine you're saying, well, wow, we didn't expect him to act like that in an interview setting. Act like that. I mean, that's what he's been. That was good, Dana. I mean, I don't understand why. I honestly, I'm asking this because I don't. What does not disclosing the location have to do with anything? I don't. You think if ESPN wanted it out there, they just put it out there. They'd have Brett Okamoto put it out there. So what does that have to do with anything?
I don't know. I'm just giving you speculation. I'm giving you my thoughts on why they all of a sudden pulled the plug. I mean, they could have gotten ESPN could have gotten. Heat from, you know, health officials or from, you know, from somebody in Washington. I don't know that, but, you know, there could have been pressure coming from somewhere else during all of this of, hey, we would prefer that you not do this. And I don't know if we'll ever really know what the answer to that question is.
Honestly, Willie,
I think
that's
it's pretty obvious.
Don't
you think it's pretty obvious? When he wouldn't disclose where the event was, you knew there were red flags going up. You knew he had tried to put it. If you look at some of the articles that have been written, I read one last night, where he basically tried to put it in different places, and he got he got shut down everywhere he tried. So he had to go to what was the I think it was a Native American designated area that did not. I mean, that was the only place he could do it. But I think at that point, ESPN was like, wait a minute. I mean, this just we can't let this happen. We're ESPN. We're not ready to do this right now. I think that was the key. But I wonder if he just had not done the interview, right, and just maybe laid low and not said anything. Could he have pulled it off?
Well, how do you promote a fight if you lay low?
You
need people to buy a fight.
I mean, you say you're doing
it,
but
he's a promoter. That's what he is.
No, you promote it within your hardcore audience, and you don't go on a mainstream show like SportsCenter or you know, the Get Up, I guess it was on, right? So he's talking to Get Up.
Yeah.
So that crosses over into an audience that is not familiar with UFC, where you have people that are more likely to be going, what are they doing? You know, come on, we're not ready to do this right now. Haven't you been watching the mainstream world? The mainstream world has pretty much said we're not ready to have live sporting events yet. And so I think they got into that territory. I wonder if he had just kind of laid low, let the word get out to all of the UFC diehards. I almost said UCF. That exposes me, right? But I think those people would have watched, and he might have pulled it off.
Well, first of all, I think as we talked about, it was going to be more than hardcore fans. In times like this, if you were ever going to get new eyeballs on any product, now is the time. That's why I said, like NASCAR, I would figure out a way, if possible, to be extremely aggressive to get back up. They need new eyeballs. They need fresh eyeballs on their product. They have lost their fan base, 50% of it over the years, the erosion of NASCAR. And so I don't think it would have been hardcore UFC fans. I think that they had a shot to really get a lot of people. A Saturday night in these times, I think it had a chance to be a big hit. But to me, I would lean toward there was pressure from outside forces to the higher ups at ESPN, you know, whether it was, you know, politicians, whether it was, you know, someone from the White House, CDC, I don't know. I just think there were outside forces that have eventually put the squeeze on too much for them to pull the plug, because I don't understand why now. I mean, this has been going on. This conversation has been going on for weeks, and you pull the plug, what, 9 days before the event?
I think sometimes that icky feeling is sitting there and people are on the fence, and then you hear that interview, and I think if you're an ESPN executive, you're like, that was the tipping point. Oh, we got to shut it down. Can't do it. Not ready. Maybe that was just the moment that somebody needed to say, okay.
But what was the tipping point in the interview? I asked both of you.
When he wouldn't disclose, he wouldn't disclose where the event was going on.
But that's it. Really, if you really get down to it, for an event that wasn't going to have house fans, what difference does it make?
Because they wouldn't let him do it in 90% of the country.
Right. Yeah.
He tried all these different places. They wouldn't let him do it. And so he's got to go to the, you know, the Native American land. That didn't sit well. And he wouldn't even admit that. If he'd have just said, hey, you know, we found an area, they're sanctioning it, we're okay. That would have even sounded better than just saying it's on ESPN. It doesn't matter where it is. It does matter.
Yeah, and I agree with Willie on that, because that's where, and again, this is Dana being Dana, but that's where he came off as kind of arrogant. Like, I don't have to tell you that. I mean, you're on a flagship show for your partner, and you're being asked multiple times where the event's going to be. I think you can give a little bit better of an answer than that, because, I mean, as you said, Darren, I mean, ESPN knows they have to be in the loop on this. And so I kind of feel like he should have done that. I was wondering if he's going to come out and say, you know, our friend Vince McMahon with WWE, we're going to use their facility. I mean, they've had it on lockdown, and they just did their WrestleMania, so we're going to set up the Octagon there and do it at the Performance Center in Orlando. But I kind of agree with Willie that I think that was the turning point.
If you're Vince McMahon, there's no way you would agree to that. I mean, I wouldn't. I don't care what their relationship is. And Brett said their relationship has not been great over the years, but it's gotten better. But why would you bring in outside forces to your place? This is, you know what I mean? I I wouldn't even – I don't think anybody would risk that.
Well, Vince would have an angle, I'm sure, if he was going to do something like that, whether it's financial or,
well, sure.
Okay, Dana owes me something. Or,
well, of course.
You know, but I look, you make a very good point of, you know, Vince McMahon could be like, hey, I got it figured out, so I'm not sharing, so you figure it out on your own. I mean, that's a fair point, fair counterpoint. But
well, I would expect him to say that, quite honestly.
Yeah.
I mean – so, I don't know. It's just interesting that we thought there was actually going to be a live sporting event next Saturday, but that is not going to happen. I just think it's going to be difficult, especially this month in April, right? I mean, I know wrestling has done it, and I guess to me what it's saying, and this is what will probably speed up the process, if this whole Dana Island is true, then it will just speed up the process in my mind, because that's how Vince McMahon is doing it, right? He's got his own place.
Yep.
And if Dana has to rely on other people, it's probably not going to happen for the foreseeable future. So if he's got his own facility or place or island or whatever you want to call it, that he can house, that's theirs.
Well, he still maintains that the island is a real thing. Like,
yeah,
the fight island is going to happen eventually.
Well, and Brett confirmed that it was a real thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that doesn't surprise
me. Where do you think the island is?
In the ocean.
I'm going to say Tom Hanks is the only person that has seen the island outside of Dana White in the UFC. Him and Wilson.
Oh, boy.
I don't know. I don't know where the island is. It's a great question. Will you know, when will we find that out? Because I do believe it's true.
Is Luke Skywalker on the island?
Are you still,
do you need R2-D2 and the missing piece of the map, like the Star Wars thing, to find this island?
Is this a carryover from last night's broadcast from Star Wars night?
It could be. I don't know.
By the way, Chris Mason's find video that he made it look like he was on the Millennium Falcon, that was fantastic. Did you see that, Darren?
Oh, man.
No, but I did go watch the Philip Forsberg video yesterday, and it was outstanding. That was outstanding. It's really fun.
By the way,
you know what I liked about it? It shows personality. That's what I liked about it. And that's what fans want to see, right? People want to see these guys that are incredible athletes, but they've got a little personality to them.
Yeah.
Playing
the
piano.
And they're going through the same things that we're going through, right? Trying to occupy ourselves within our space here and having to get creative here. Did you see there was a really interesting article, the bond, and we talked about it before, the bond between George Kittle and Philip Forsberg.
Well, Forsberg
there's
had
some things
a
49ers I learned in that that I didn't know.
He had a 49ers hat on in that video. So let's talk about that on the other side. We'll get into that on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. XFL to suspend operations effective immediately. All employees are laid off. That coming from the XFL, just coming out there, they're going to suspend all operations effective immediately. All employees will indeed be laid off. All right, so we went into the break talking about Philip Forsberg's video, which is clever and funny. You should go look at it. The Predators have tweeted it out, and the NHL has tweeted it out, and it was really well done. Like I said, it shows some personality from Philip Forsberg. And I think people want to see that and just kind of what he was doing. He went through the piano and the golf, the video games, and it was well done. But if you notice in the video, he has got a 49ers hat on. Well, if you've been listening to this show, you have heard us talk about this several times. In fact, last time we had Trent Dilfer on, I specifically asked about his relationship with George Kittle's dad and why he is on his staff as his offensive line coach. And Trent Dilfer talked about that. And I have brought up many times where I have seen George Kittle and his wife, or is it girlfriend or wife, at the games with Philip Forsberg's girlfriend and their parents. I mean, I see them at a lot of Predators games. I know exactly where they sit. Sit in basically the same place every time. And it's just pretty interesting. The first time I think we were tipped off by this is when we had on C.J. Beathard on our show, what, last year, or was it even the year before? I don't. Maybe it was last year. Yeah, it was. It was last year during the offseason, and he was having a camp, and he told us that George Kittle was going to be one of the guests at his football camp. And we're like, oh, wow, yeah, that's cool. That's nice of him as your teammate to get him to come here and be a part of your camp. And CJ said, well, he lives here now. And we were like, George Kittle lives in Nashville? So that was the first time we were tipped off of it. And so we've been talking about it on the show. And I know that Adam Vingan from The Athletic has also written a story on this today as well. So it's just pretty interesting to read. And we've tried connecting the dots on the show. And like I said, they go to a lot of Predators games. I see the Kittle family at a lot of Predators games, and they are always with Philip Forsberg's girlfriend for the most part. So it's pretty interesting dynamic, and of course I noticed that in the video yesterday when I watched it of him having the hat on backwards, and when he turned around, because when he was doing putting on his golf display, his putting display, I noticed that it was a 49ers hat.
Well, there was an article written by Adam Vingan in The Athletic detailing the relationship between George Kittle and Philip Forsberg. Of course, their girlfriends are good friends, as you just talked about, Darren. And so it clued me in on a couple of things. I did not realize. I thought the celebrations.
They're married.
Kittle's wife, Philip's girlfriend. So there was, you know, Chase, you can help me on this one. I watched, you know, when Philip Forsberg scores a great goal, he's got some of the fun celebrations, but I didn't know the wrestling moves well enough to know that George Kittle had inspired him to do some of the super wrestling guys' things. I thought he was shooting a jump shot like everybody else was on one of them, but apparently that's a move by a wrestler.
Yeah, so in the article, Adam has, you know, and Adam's a big wrestling fan too, so he had to include that, but he includes the Stone Cold Steve Austin-esque pounding the beers together celebration, and that's something that Hal Gill actually did on Twitter a week or so ago with the Bud Lights. He did the Stone Cold Steve Austin beer chug. So look, yeah, and George Kittle has he's been to events and they've shown him. I mean, he's a big wrestling fan, so I guess he's gotten Forsberg into it also, which is kind of neat to combine the two, because there are several WWE superstars that live in Nashville that come to Preds games all the time. Rusev and Sheamus are there quite a bit, so nice to kind of see them combine.
When's George Kittle a free agent?
That is a good question. Let me look that up. Because he's been in the league, what now, 4 years now or three?
I want to say four.
That seems about right. So he signed a 4-year deal with them in 2017. So he's got
a year left.
A year left. Yeah.
Is he going into his final year?
Yeah, I mean, there's an article that when I Googled that they're already talking about. They're already talking about what his next contract would look like. Yeah, he's in his final year.
Yeah, you guys want to start the rumor of him to Nashville?
Well, and
go on and get that going.
It's perfect too, because, you know, look, nothing. John, I think the Titans hope they have their tight end of the future in Jonnu Smith, but Jonnu Smith is going to have to carry the load with Anthony Firkser and Mykole Pruitt. But if George Kittle's available, I think you definitely have to make those phone calls.
Jonnu Smith, that's not – it's we love Jonnu Smith, and Jonnu Smith is not at the George Kittle level. Not even close. George Kittle is arguably – I mean, I think – I don't think there's any doubt. It's him and Travis Kelce is the best tight ends in the league, right?
And yeah. I think
can you even argue that?
A combination of a blocker as well as a receiver – I think Kelce might be the superior receiver, but the combination of the two, you might go with Kittle.
Yeah, so his rookie deal.
I would agree with that.
His rookie deal will be up after this season. Now, you know, you have to figure that if he continues to play at the level that he's played, don't you think he's going to get tagged?
I don't know.
If they can't come up with a long-term
deal. Yeah, I don't think they're going to let him go very easily. I wouldn't think. But again, you come down to, you get to that age, right? You love the player, but once you get to the age, there's a sliding scale of what a guy's worth money wise.
He'll be 26 this year. This is his age 26 season that he's going into.
I'm just saying. Get ready to connect
Philip
those
Forsberg
dots.
Has two more years on his contract, right? So if he's trying to unite with Philip Forsberg, the Predators are going to have to find a way to keep him around after two more years. He'll only be 27 at that time.
That's what's so crazy. Like, Forsberg's been here forever now, and he's still, what, 25, 26?
Well, that's why when we talk about him, we try to remind people, like, hey, you need to remember also, he's still relatively young. I know we don't think that way because he's been in the league for so long, but he got traded to the Predators when he was 19.
Yeah, he's not even in his prime, technically. I mean, I guess you can say he is. But
I mean, I wouldn't. I wouldn't say – I mean, I guess he is, but I kind of always think his prime is like 27, 28, right? That's where I kind of feel like your real juicy prime of your career. I guess 26 you could make a case for that. But hockey's a little bit different than football.
That would be a tricky part. It's right around where Matt Duchene is in his career right now, or was when he hit the free agent market. So that's something to keep in mind. Future considerations, right? This would be after the 21-22 season. So, you know, whatever happens at the end of this season, then two more years. But at that point, and probably at the end of next season, right, that's when you probably go into that year thinking, kind of like they did with Roman Josi, if they want to keep him, that's where they got to, you know, pay the money. Roman Josi is about the same age, right, was last summer. So that's that tough one. You're going to get the last few years of a guy's prime, but then you're realistically going to be saying, if it's a long-term deal, you're going to be paying a guy into his mid-30s where he's probably not going to be the same player he was in his mid to late 20s.
The bottom line when it comes to George Kittle, if he is truly going into the last year of his contract, if George Kittle wants to come here and play, George Kittle can come here and play. I mean, the Titans obviously have to want him, so I should say that. But I don't know who in the world would not want George Kittle as their tight end. He's a stud when it comes to that position. And you think about it, it makes sense. He lives here. This is where George Kittle and his wife live. His parents live here. I just told you, his dad, the last time we talked to Trent Dilfer, he is on Trent Dilfer's staff at Lipscomb Academy. He is the offensive line coach. And they are very, very close friends with Philip Forsberg and his girlfriend. So if George Kittle wants to come here and the Titans wanted him, I mean, there's really not much the 49ers can do. And why would you force – if he's saying, look, I appreciate you guys. I've loved my time here. It's been fantastic. I just want to be on the other side of the country. I live in Nashville in the off season. Yeah. My parents live in Nashville. That's where I want to be. It's nothing against you guys, but that I just want to be on that side of the country. I mean, there's really nothing the 49ers can do, right? You don't want a guy that doesn't want to be there.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm not saying this is the case. Look, I'm not saying this is the case. I'm not putting words in George Kittle. I'm not saying as a representative of George Kittle, I don't have a clue. I'm just connecting the dots like anybody else out there. If he lives here in the offseason, his parents live here, they live here full time. I mean, I would have to believe that Nashville is of real interest to him and a very good sports friend of his is Philip Forsberg, who plays here. It's pretty easy to think that this would be a natural place that if he were going to play elsewhere, it would be here first.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that, and obviously – you know, if he keeps this up, would be a tremendous addition to the Titans and what they're trying to build offensively there. So, but, you know, I'm a little, as we talk about franchise tags, you know, I was kind of wondering what would happen with the franchise tag with these CBA negotiations. It's going to stick around, you know, as it's been there. But I do think it's going to be interesting if San Francisco, depending on what this year looks like for the NFL, but depending on what this year looks like for George Kittle, if he turns out to be the candidate. But you bring up some good points. Like, if he doesn't want to be there, why would you want him? So we'll just have to wait and see.
All right, we will come back and wrap up the second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. We are voting again today. By the way, you just made the list coming up at high noon. John Glennon also in the third hour from The Athletic. We are voting today our bracket. We continue to get this thing a little bit closer to our Final Four. We're down to our Elite Eight, and we are voting today until 9 o'clock. And what are we looking at today on the left side of the bracket?
Well, we got Steve McNair going up against Roman Josi. Right now, Steve McNair in control, 62.1% of the vote. And then Shea Weber taking on Frank Wycheck, a 2-4, 57.7% of the vote going to Shea Weber. So pretty much chalk thus far, the Wycheck and Weber vote. Obviously, you know, kind of close, but Shea Weber starting to pull away. Steve McNair, though, in control over Roman Josi.
All right, go to thegamenashville.com, thegamenashville.com, to cast your vote. We want those numbers up. Felt like for the first time this entire time, had a little bit of a tail off yesterday. Want to get those numbers back up as we push toward the finish line. Also, at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. I heard you and Ryan Porth talking today during the 9 o'clock hour leading up to our show about ranking the coaches. And before I get you to give your answers back again, I want to put Willie on the hot seat and have him rank currently the coaches in order 1-4 in the AFC South. How would you answer that, Willie? The best coach to the worst coach, in your opinion, top to bottom in the AFC South, as we sit here today on April 10th.
Wow. I'm just happy I got the brain teaser, but I thought you were going to update the brain teaser, which is, again,
wait a minute, did you get the brain teaser? You did.
Yeah, so I did on the third try. But anyway, so my brain is still recovering from that. But I think Bill O'Brien is a good coach. I think the problem is the roster building, right?
This is strictly coach. This is not GM.
So you have to separate Bill O'Brien, the coach, from Bill O'Brien, the GM. So I think Bill O'Brien has, just because they've won quite a bit here recently, when he's had his quarterback, they've done pretty well. So I'm going to go Bill O'Brien. You like Frank Reich and what he's done with his roster, and I think Mike Vrabel's done well with his roster. So I would put Frank Reich and Mike Vrabel in a tie for second, and then you got to go with the Jags fourth.
Okay.
I mean, the Jags have a new coach, right? So we can't really – he's incomplete.
I know that the Jags have Doug Marrone.
No, they have Marrone. They didn't change coaches.
He's still coaching?
Yes.
Okay. All right, then. So you have to say Doug Marrone.
I'm still shocked by that too, Willie. It's okay. I didn't think he'd keep his job.
It's all right. Nobody's really keeping up with the Jags, so it's okay.
Yeah.
So I want you, Chase, to give your answer, and then I'm going to weigh in on this, because I'm not going to say anything till I let Willie and the listeners hear what you and Ryan were on the same page about. So give your order.
We agreed, and we had Vrabel number one, and I think some of that is, you know, obviously recency bias, but getting a team that on paper shouldn't have made it to the AFC Championship, but they did. Frank Reich, 2. Billy O, 3. And then Doug Marrone, 4. Billy O, I have to weigh in some of the decisions he's making with the GM title as
well. You can't. You asked about coaches. It wasn't – because then you did the GMs. This is strictly head coaches. You guys didn't weigh in any GMs into that. That you had a separate category for general managers.
Yeah,
so why would you weigh it in as a coach?
We did, but I still have him 3 behind Vrabel and Frank Reich.
I bring this up because I literally was screaming at my Alexa, and I scream at her a lot. Like, what are you guys talking? Like, Mike Vrabel 1 and Bill O'Brien 3? How in the world could you – look, whatever we think of Bill O'Brien, and he has been the butt of a lot of jokes right now, but as a head coach right now in the division, he doesn't come off as a likable person. That's very clear. I didn't say it was about likability. Well, you just simply asked the question, who's the best head coach in the AFC South, and you're looking at his body of work over 6 seasons, and you think he's 3rd in the division, and Mike Vrabel is 1st? How in the world could you possibly come to that conclusion?
I'm weighing in the postseason.
He's gone to the postseason 4 out of 6 years.
And what's he done with it?
What difference does it make? He's gone.
It makes a ton of difference.
How many division titles does he have?
Okay, you're right. He has.
Does that mean nothing? That means nothing.
No, it means a lot. But what's he done after that?
They four division titles in 6 years, and you have him as the third best coach in the division?
Because they get to the postseason and they choke.
Chase.
They
and Mike Vrabel. I mean, it comes off as the
you
most
have to get to
homer
the postseason.
Selection in the world.
You have to get to the
Mike
postseason
Vrabel
to choke in the postseason.
Is one over a guy who's won the division 4 out of 6 years? How in the world could you two come up with that? That makes no sense at all.
Because I said right now as we sit, and yeah, I mean there, and I admitted there could be some recency bias, but when Bill O'Brien gets to the postseason, they find a way to choke. They should have beaten Kansas City. It should have been Houston in Tennessee in the AFC Championship game, and it wasn't because they squandered that lead. I think you have to factor that in there. And we've talked to many people from Houston, Sean Salisbury being one of them, and they always bring that up. When people want to say that they want Bill O'Brien gone, they always reference the postseason. So how could you not? Yeah, regular season, he's been tremendous. They've won those four division titles, but I definitely think
and Mike Vrabel's won because of one run in 2 years. He's the best coach in the division. One run in 2 years.
He's had two winning seasons.
Bill O'Brien's had five.
Okay,
five
well,
of the
Mike
six.
Vrabel's only been head coach for two seasons.
I don't know how in the world you could possibly, no matter what you think of Bill O'Brien, and I think he's a boob too, and I don't think he's a likable guy, but how you can look at his body of work, 9 wins, 9 wins, 9 wins, 4 wins, 11 wins, 10 wins. That's his 6 seasons as a head coach
wins,
of the Texans.
The 4 wins is the year that Watson got hurt. So you have to look at that.
Yeah,
but I do think it's a good argument between the three. I think it's pretty close between the three, but and you can't penalize Reich and Vrabel for not being there very long. You have to judge them for the time that they've been there. But I think O'Brien's track record, you have to get to the postseason to choke in the postseason. There's something to be said for consistent winning, and so I think you got to give O'Brien the nod.
I mean, look, it's fair, and you made a point of tying Frank Reich and Mike Vrabel because you do have to give Frank Reich some credit for dealing with the sudden retirement of Andrew Luck and then having to go with Jacoby Brissett as his quarterback.
Yeah, I thought they were very resourceful
under
those circumstances. That's why I grade Reich pretty high.
Yeah, that's just my opinion, and, you know, you obviously disagree with me, Darren, and that's fine. And regular season is one thing with Bill O'Brien, but – show me what they've done in the postseason.
That's such a ridiculous argument. When you get into the playoffs every year and you're with, and Mike Vrabel has never won a division and they made a run and they didn't get into the playoffs the first year, and you think that because they went to the AFC title game that he's a better coach?
Do you think he did?
By the
more
way,
with
the Texans
less?
Lost in the round before the AFC title game when they were up 24-0, they gagged it away.
I know. I was sitting in the studio with you watching it. They should have won that game. I mean, it's a choke job. But do you think Vrabel did more with less? Do you think that Houston's
roster
was better than
Tennessee? I think Bill O'Brien, quite honestly, has done more with less. Honestly, I don't know. We look at their roster. J.J. Watt goes down every year. Clowney's gone down. They've traded guys away. I mean, I keep going.
He's traded guys away.
Well, he wasn't always the GM.
We're talking about the coach.
We're not talking about the GM. We're talking about the coach. This is the head coach. That's it. And a guy that's been to the playoffs 4 out of 6 years and won 4 division titles in 6 years as a head coach, and the other season he was 9-7, sound familiar, and didn't get into the playoffs. That guy is less. He is third in the division and less to the two guys that have been doing it for 2 seasons? I don't know how anybody could come up with that argument. That made no sense to me whatsoever. I know, and it made no sense whatsoever. I mean, he gets to the playoffs and he doesn't get anywhere in the playoffs. Oh, he's gone to 2 divisional rounds and 2 wild card rounds, which means he's won twice and advanced.
Won twice in 6 years? He's won 2 playoff games?
Yes.
Yeah, I hold that against him.
That's a ridiculous argument. I mean, ridiculous.
That's fine.
But anyway, we'll come back. I'm probably going to put you on the list just for that.
Go ahead.
Just made the list to kick off the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.